Hello, and welcome to SoberCast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting SoberCast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name's John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
It's very loud in here, isn't it? It's a privilege to be asked to share on the traditions, and I mean, if this doesn't go too well, at least I wrote a lot. And I've tried to take it seriously because it being of service to my home group is something that is bound up in the traditions, and I try not to read any of this because I don't think reading works too well, but the tradition's all about sacrifice and all about humility, each of us and collectively doing, suppressing our own natural desires to for fame and prestige and sort of, being a big shot in AA or in the world outside, just for the preservation of our fellowship. Because at the end of the day, the traditions, the more you read these things and the more you sort of talk to the old timers about them, get involved in service yourself, the traditions kind of like become as important, if not more important, than the steps in a way. You know, they're slightly different, obviously coming at it from different angles. But the steps, the 12 steps, are dead in the water without the traditions. And if they're dead in the water, then so are you and me. So why the traditions are important, because they ensure the unity, the and effectiveness of Alcoholics Anonymous and any given group in AA as a whole. You know, so the fact that we're here in this meeting, the fact that we're here in this group is all because this group sticks rigidly, as best it can, to the 12 traditions. And if I don't have a group, then I don't recover. You know, so that's how important my life is on the line. You know, when something threatens this group, you know, whether it be from outside or inside, I could try and take responsibility and make sure that this group is protected. And now that might be something as minor as, you know, suggesting to the person next to me not to make such a racket with their sweet papers, you know, or kind of like trying to keep the drunk a little bit quiet, you know, whatever. Or it might mean literally asking someone to leave the meeting because they're disturbing the meeting. You know, that their tradition one is all about unity. A common welfare should come first. You know, like I said before, personal recovery depends upon AA unity. It's absolutely vital that we have unity. And we'll refer to the notes a little bit. So the newcomer isn't the most important person in the meeting. The group's more important than any individual. You know, so if some guy or woman is disrupting the meeting to the extent that we've got to ask them to leave or call the police to make them go, then that's just the way it's got to be. You know, they'll be welcome back next time. You know, next Friday they come along, and if they're in better shape, then that's great. You know, we'll bend over backwards to help anybody, but we can't have them disrupting the meeting because it disrupts us from our primary purpose. You know, we're not able to carry the message. We're too busy worrying about what, you know, shenanigans they're going to get up to. You know what I mean? You only have to experience a disruptive person in the meeting to know that that's the truth. Something that Clancy said at the World Convention back in 1995. Not that I was there, but I've got a tape. And it's like one of the famous AA tapes, you know, to me. You know, and he said that a meeting where anything goes eventually becomes a meeting where nobody goes. And that is, and so that, like we've heard in our meetings, you know, recently, it's not about being strict in a meeting. It's just knowing that, you know, the thin end of the wedge, you know, that if we allow certain things to happen, you know, which shouldn't happen in an AA meeting, eventually this meeting will peter out because it won't be attractive anymore to people. And in my time in AA in Plymouth, so 21 years of AA in Plymouth, you know, I've seen meetings die. I mean, meetings, I don't suppose they really fold because anybody really wanted them to fold. They died. You know, and it probably because they weren't sticking to the traditions. In fact, this group itself was formed on the basis that the old timers, my good friend Mr. K here and others, you know, were going to meetings where, you know, the traditions weren't being adhered to. The message wasn't being carried to the alcoholic who still suffers. So that's why we gather together in unity, to do just that. Because if we don't carry the message to the alcoholics, we don't give away freely what was being given to us, then we perish. So unity is, all the traditions basically go to support unity, which is what tradition one is all about. Tradition two says that there is only one ultimate authority in our group, one ultimate authority in AA, a loving God as he expresses himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they don't govern. You know, so when I was told that there's a higher power, and you know, in AA, it was there in black and white. You know, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. For atheists and agnostics, you know, there's a route right in just there, you know, because that's what it says in tradition too. We don't need what have I got here? That's why it's important to attend group conscience meetings and be part of that higher power. So, you know, on a practical level, when the group conscience meetings come around every 6 months in this group, but in the early days when the group was smaller, it was every 2 months. It's important that I, as a member of this group, as a voting member of this group and in AA, I attend those group conscience meetings, because that's where the higher power's at. Now, who wouldn't want to be where the higher power's at? You know what I mean? I forget the long word for it now. I'm not taking responsibility. I still can't think of it. I'm not taking responsibility if I don't turn up at my group conscience meeting. And sometimes those group conscience meetings might go on a bit. They might go on into the small hours of the night, but past 11 o'clock quite often. You know what I mean? And so what? You know, again, this it's too important to ignore. You know, that I need to be able to do these things. The group conscience delegates some of that authority to the steering committee. We have a steering committee in this group because we got quite big. We couldn't, it was unwieldy to run the group's affairs in a big group conscience meeting. You know, the newcomers piping in with bullshit basically quite often. You know, and no disrespect. So we had to run it more effectively than that. So we have a steering committee. Now the steering committee and the group delegates a lot of that higher power to the GSR. And the GSR is just like one of the, you know, the prime examples of the other part of this tradition, that our leaders are but trusted servants, they don't govern. So the GSR, he's not anyone's boss. But we delegate a lot of authority to them. So it's important that we do what he or she, in this case, Matt at the back there, who's a GSR at the moment, it's important that we do what he asks us to do. Because it's a group. It's the group through him that is asking us to do it. And who wouldn't want to do what the group wants? If you don't want to do what the group wants, go to another group. You know, it's important that we stick to that principle, in my view. So turning over. Tradition three. I mean, at the end of the day, these traditions aren't, I'm doing them separately, but really, the more you read them, you realise that they're all woven together. There are basic sort of concepts that weave the whole thing together. The great liberty we have, you know, the lack of governance, the willingness to do these things because our lives depend on it. You know, not having, our leaders aren't dictators. We follow them because we want to follow them, because we like the example that they're setting. You know, so and anonymity, you know, and it's all about humility. And you know, anonymity is anonymity is so important that the secretary reads out that anonymity tradition before the meeting starts. You know, so these things all interweave together. But tradition three is about the only requirement for membership being a desire to stop drinking, because in the early days of AA, they were very frightened of, who would be the next to slip up? Who would be the next to have a drink? They didn't have the long periods of sobriety that we have today. I mean, I'm 21 years sober. Alexis is 23, 24 years sober. You know, but, you know, when these traditions were written, 1946-ish, you know, AA had been going sort of 10, 11 years. You know, so they didn't have, and in the period up to that time, they didn't have these long periods of sobriety where they could be sure that we could let everybody in. You know, they thought they had to be really careful about who they let in. They wouldn't let in. They only wanted pure alcoholics, and I like this bit. So beggars, tramps, asylum inmates, prisoners, queers, plain crackpots, and fallen women were definitely out. Well, what they had against fallen women, I've no idea. I mean, every group should have a couple of fallen women. But they realised, joking apart, that to exclude anybody would be to sign their death warrant. You know, we don't care what you've done, we only care what you're trying to be. And only I, when I came in, could declare myself a member. Nobody could sort of poke me in the chest and say, are you really an alcoholic? No, even in the beginning of the meeting, we say, you know, if you think you have a problem with alcohol, you're welcome to attend this meeting. That's how inclusive we are, you know. And but, you know, it does say the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, not a desire to be doing anything else, to stop drinking. So as I've heard Clancy say on that world famous tape from 1995, you know, this group must consist of alcoholics. Because if I don't identify with you, if I don't identify with your alcoholism, which is, you know, which is to a large part your drinking, then I'm not going to do what you've done to recover. Because it's just going to be, like Clancy said, just going to be information. There's a, you know, what's that got to do with me? So I've got to be an alcoholic to come here. Unless it's an open meeting, of course, in which case, you know, your friends and family can turn up, but that's a different thing. Tradition four, so there's a great liberty in tradition three. There's a great liberty in tradition four. So, you know, what does it say in tradition four? We're autonomous. Each group is autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. So we gather together for the purposes of sobriety, but we can do what the hell we like. There's no thing that I always thought when I was new, that there's no one in Exeter telling us what to do. I say Exeter because Exeter is the county town, and they're posh up there, aren't they, and all that sort of stuff. And they were literally the county. So I use that as an analogy. But there's no one in Exeter telling us what to do. It's just us. We can forget all this and read the Beano and stand on our heads if we want in the meeting. It's up to us. No one can tell us what to do. But we don't do anything we don't affiliate ourselves with anybody else as a group, you know, which has overlaps with tradition six, overlaps with, you know, other traditions. Because to affiliate ourselves with anybody else would divert us from our primary purpose. What is our primary purpose? We'll find out in tradition five. You know, to carry the message of the alcoholic who still suffers. So we voluntarily associate ourselves in the common interest, and sobriety has to be our sole objective. And we do that. We don't mess around with that autonomy. We don't take liberties with that autonomy because, you know, what does it say here? We don't need those big shots in Exeter telling us what to do. We have to conform to spiritual principles because John Barleycorn will kill us if we don't. But if we try and do God's will, we can live and be happy. So we can do what we like, but if we're going to get anywhere, we've got to stick to the traditions. We've got to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That's the groups who don't do that don't survive. Tradition five, coming neatly on. I mean, the thing that hooked me into AA was listening to people talk about the insanity of their drinking. The people like Alexis here talking about the insanity. You know, I can remember words from his share in 94, 95, you know. And it dawned on me, listening to these things week in, week out, the same boring old shares, you know, that you hear people criticizing. Oh, they say the same thing at Rhodes every week. Good. Because I might not be here if they didn't. I mean, I literally might not be here if they didn't just share about the insanity of drinking, the recovery from alcoholism, about the 12 steps. I remember sitting in the Friday meeting thinking, they keep going on about those 12 steps. Maybe I ought to do those 12 steps. You know, maybe I'm an alcoholic of that type. Not that I wasn't the sharpest tool in the box, you know what I mean? I need to stick to that principle of carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And again, identification. There's a sort of harking back to tradition three. I'm sharing for the alcoholic in this meeting who still suffers. Not the sick man, as Clancy would put it. You know, just the alcoholic who still suffers. Because again, without that identification, it's just information to me. I'm just not going to be inspired to do what you've done if you're not talking about something that is of interest to me. So, and that's why these traditions, that's why we can't have people in the meeting diverting us from our primary purpose, because I'll be distracted. I'll lose my way. I just won't get it. You know, so it's that's why, you know, that's why all you guys and girls are being really nice and quiet while I go on about this, you know, because if you start disrupting the meeting, someone ain't going to hear it, such as it is. Tradition six. I mean, when I was new, when I'd had a spiritual experience as a result of doing these steps, I wanted to tell the world. I mean, I've heard people say it, you know, I wanted to get out there and tell people what a great thing AA is, what a great thing my home group is. It saved me. Surely, if it saved me, a loser like me, I should, why not tell the world about these principles? Why not get everybody, governments and families and you name it, to put down their weapons and pick up the 12 steps, and everybody will love each other and all that sort of stuff, you know? And it was tempting. That's what they thought in the early times in AA. They thought just that. They didn't realize, going back to tradition five, they just had to do this one thing, carry the message the alcoholic who still suffers. Forget all that other stuff. But it was tempting for them to become, for financial reasons sometimes, to get money in, you know, looking forward to tradition seven, get money in, to lend the AA name to other outside enterprises. You know, but at the time, you know, they thought they'd be doing AA some good by doing that, you know, or individual AAs would use the AA name, you know, to advance a cause outside of the fellowship. And it was all—I mean, it all looked quite attractive in those days. They didn't have the benefit of hindsight that we've got today, and just see that you can't do that sort of stuff. You can't dissipate a group's message, and you can't get it involved in other enterprises because problems of money and property and prestige, as it says, will divert us from our primary purpose. I mean, there's a good line in the 12 and 12 says, you know, a banker or something like that who might make a decision to do something with $100,000 quite easily over the phone would kick up a real stink about the spending of $25 on tea and biscuits in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we get animated about things in our group. So, moving on to tradition seven, money and spirituality. Tradition seven, each group should be self-supporting, not accept contributions from outside sources. You know, so I'm going to take more care of something that I've supported by my own contributions than if the big wigs in Exeter or up in York are giving me or my group loads of money. You give me loads of money, or give this group loads of money, most of us, I suspect, will go, well, we don't have to worry about it. We can take our hands off we don't have to be responsible for our group anymore. We don't have to be responsible for paying the rent. And that, the whole sort of spiritual reason for being here would sort of go out the window. So, but they were tempted in the early days they thought they needed money. Those early AAs, they thought they needed money. They wanted rich people, like the Rockefellers and so on, to bail AA out. We thought we'd need loads of money for hospitals, you know, because we were going to fix the world, you know, and they thought we needed all this money and all this financial support. But the rich people realized better than we did that as a fellowship, we didn't need money. We had to take responsibility ourselves and pay our own way, because, like I said before, responsibility. We're going to take more care for something if we're responsible for it. That's just a fact of human life. I'm going to look after something more if I'm responsible for it. But we needed some money. We need some money to. Forgive me for flicking the pages. We need some money to make sure that we can pay the rent. Make sure we do have tea and biscuits and all those little nice things we've got in the meeting. But principally, if we don't stump up for the rent, we might lose our venue. And if we lose our venue, where's our group going to go? Where are we going to have a meeting? Where are we going to carry the message the alcoholic who still suffers? It's not going to happen. So occasionally, when the treasurer thinks things are getting a little bit dire on the financial front, the treasurer will make an announcement. You probably heard it. You know, the pot's a little bit low. You know, we're not taking responsibility for being self-supporting. And the GSR, the Treasury, has to make an announcement so that we can get honest, really, and you know, put some money in the pot. It's not good enough just to be doing loads of service. We like Bill says, we give a lot of our time, but we're apt to turn a little bit, you know, reluctant when it comes to putting money in the hat. And and we need to do that. You know, one of the other things about Tradition 7 is if we accept money from outside sources, as well as kind of like taking our spiritual hands off the wheel and not bothering to be responsible in our groups, we'll be at the behest of the people who've given us the money. So if I pop my clogs tomorrow and leave this group 10 grand in my will, you won't take it. AA up at GSO won't take it. Because, you know, that kind of money is not good for us. You know, we're going to argue over what to do with it. You know, it might come with a stipulation that my wife's allowed to come along and be boss of AA every Friday night. You know, it's just stuff like that. You know, it's just not going to be good for us. So we have to be responsible to pay our own way. Tradition 8 is about not doing the 12th step for money. Not doing the 12th step for money. So it's like all these other traditions that allow us to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, because we get sober, we stay sober by doing that. And if it's a spiritual program for a spiritual malady, you know, so that Bill realized early on, you know, he was tempted himself to carry the message for money, to be paid a fee. But if I do that, and he realized, and his group realized before he did, that if he did that, the spiritual bang goes out of it. I get nothing. I don't get any defense against picking up the first drink, in my view, if I'm carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers for a fee. So that's absolutely a no-no. But we do, like it says, employ people to do service for us. You know, so up in York, in this country, General Service Office has to employ people to run the office, you know, to distribute literature and do all the other things that they do on behalf of, as a service to us, you know, the grassroots members. But we have to pay those people, because no one's going to do all that stuff, you know, sweep the floors or cook the dinners, or, you know, mail the books out to people for diddly squat. I wouldn't do it, and I don't suppose any of you would. I'd want to be paid. But that's not 12-step work, that, as Bill says. That's just making 12-step work possible. You know, so there's a distinction between making 12-step work possible and actually sitting in front of an alcoholic or sharing a meeting and actually doing the 12-step. So we have to, in that sense, separate the money from spirituality. At that level, they don't mix. Money and spirituality mix on another level, because we've got to pay the rent and things like that. And there's a famous story of, you know, Ebby, when he went to carry the message to Bill. Like Bill says, he had to put 10 cents in the subway turnstile. Otherwise, he would never have got to Bill's place to carry the message, and we wouldn't be here. We'd probably be dead. So money is necessary, but not too much. Tradition 9, we're not organized. And I didn't know this. You know, this is a concept that I wasn't familiar with. It says AA needs the least possible organization. It seems pretty organized here. When I first read that tradition, I thought the Road to Recovery group seemed like the most organized group of anything that I'd ever come across. You know, quite rigid, it seemed to me. It seems really, really well organized. But it wasn't. That's not what organization means in this tradition. Organization, the way that explained by Bill in the 12 and 12, is the power to govern people and to mete out punishment. Like society does, and like a lot of other organizations do. If you don't do this, we're going to kick you out. We're going to punish you. You're going to have to pay a fine. You're going to have to go to prison, whatever it is. But in AA, we don't have that. We don't have organization like that. I can do what the hell I like. I can get up and walk out if I want to. You know what I mean? We can do whatever we like as a group. You know, excuse me. Yeah, it's being willing to follow spiritual principles. I do what my sponsor suggests me, you know, because I want what he's got. You don't have to be. You can't have, again, you know, like Clancy said, you can't have a dictator type sponsor. You know, I follow my sponsor because I want what he's got. I'm willing to follow that leadership. You know, and that's the only. I don't need a government to do that. But it's a arm around the shoulder or a boot up the ass occasionally, but it's not government. We freely associate ourselves in the common interest, and that tradition has a lot to do with as what something Alexis will touch on about leadership. You know and harking back tradition too. You know, we don't have these people telling us what to do, because people like you and me, we'll rebel. I'll rebel if someone's telling me what to do. I'll say up yours. I'm not going to do it. But you know, these trusted servants, especially the old timers, you know, in our case, the founders of the group, they're the people we follow. Although we devolve a lot of going back a little bit, but tradition two, tradition nine, we devolve a lot of power and authority to the GSR. If the GSR doesn't know what to do, who does he go and talk to? He goes and talks to one of the old timers, because they are the people. They are the true leaders of this group. They are the true leaders of Alcoholics Anonymous. They are the real and effective voice of AA, whether it be in this group or AA as a whole. We're lucky in this group, in my opinion, to have leaders that we're willing to follow to that extent. We willingly do it. We don't need to be told what to do. If I need to be told what to do all the time, then I just haven't got step one. You know what I mean? You know, but we are lucky in this group that we've got strong leaders, and that's something that comes up in concept nine. And tradition 10 is all about staying out of controversy. So again, just we try to stick to our primary purpose, carry the message to the alcoholic abuse sufferers, don't get involved in all this stuff going on in society at the public level. So if the intergroup gets a call from the Herald says, you know, there's all this underage drinking in Plymouth at the moment, and you've got an opinion on that? And the PI person is going to say, sorry, we don't have an opinion on that. It's tempting to say, oh, yeah, you know, and start to go off on one, but we just say we haven't got an opinion on it. We share our experience, we carry the message, we might better cooperate with these people, but we just stay out of controversy, because if the public see us just in their perception, even if it's not real, they think, oh, that AA lot, they seem to be giving opinions on this and opinions on that. As soon as you give an opinion on something, somebody's got the opposite opinion. Bang, controversy. You might not even think it's coming, but that is the nature of controversy. So we just keep our heads down and don't get involved in any kind of controversy at the public level. We might have, even, and the book says this, and this is true. I've seen it, you know, in my time in AA. We don't even talk that much about religion and politics amongst ourselves. You know, if someone's sort of going off on one about which party they've got to vote for, whether they're in or out of Europe, or you know what religious affiliations they've got. After a while, it just seems, can we just get back to talking about alcoholism? Or, you know, something. You know, I mean, I've put here, you know, we can say that Argyle are shit. But even if we do that, we must wear a big smile when saying it. So that's, you know, it's all right to slag off Argyle, but don't talk about politics and religion. I'm just kidding. Tradition 11, going back to what Jim was saying earlier, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our principles. Breaking anonymity at the public level will make me feel bad, like Clancy says. The personal ambition has no place in AA. When I was PI officer for Intergroup, I wrote a letter to the Herald about something, I forget what it was, and I'm sure I put in my letter, I had put my name so they knew who I was, I had to put, you know, I had to put John. But I said, don't print my full name, just put John or something like that, I forget what I put. But they inadvertently printed my whole name. And John, and I was mortified because I knew that I'd broken tradition 11. I didn't feel too bad about it. I shared it with my sponsor because I'm sure I asked them not to do it. If I'd kind of like slipped it in hoping they would do it, I'd feel bad. You know what I mean? We can't have, but anonymity is, you know, really important, because if, I can tell people that I'm a member of AA, you know, carry the message to employers or to my family or to other people. You know, these quiet disclosures, as Bill talks about, that's fine. But as soon as I put my head above the parapet and start sort of speaking for AA or just breaking my anonymity for some other reason, maybe I'm on the board of the local treatment centre, and I say, and I write to the Herald, yeah, you know, John, you know, board of the, oh, I'm a member of AA, by the way. Because using the AA name is really a big deal for people. It carries a lot of weight, you know. And people think we'll get more people in if we break anonymity. If the famous footballer or whoever else, you know, breaks their anonymity on the radio or on the television or something, in it you'd think, oh yeah, lots of people are going to know about AA. That bloke's in AA. He's got well. Look at him. He's sober. You know what I mean? You think that would bring more people in, but it doesn't. It's a short term gain. Even if it's a gain at all. Because people will be, if that guy gets drunk, we're all in the shit. You know what I mean? It just doesn't look good on any of us. Or starts saying things about things nothing to do with carrying the message. Starts spouting on about some opinion he's got on politics, or religion, or something like that. Imagine we get involved in this controversy again. Tradition 10. Well, you know, it's not gonna go well for us. So we stay below that. We remain anonymous at the public level. And I do it because I don't want to feel bad, but it's humility, really. Going on to tradition 12, principles before personalities. You know, that anonymity is a principle which is of enormous, like Bill says, of enormous benefit to this fellowship, because by being anonymous, I mean the public confidence that comes from being anonymous is incalculable. The little breaks, the anonymity breaks by the famous person here or the prestigious person there might get people in for 5 minutes. But the long-lasting attraction of Alcoholics Anonymous has been because people are impressed by our reluctance, our saying no to personal, you know, above the level of the in the public domain, the personal leadership that you see so many other organizations relying upon to advance their causes. They're impressed by our humility, you know, which is the root of anonymity. You know, that sacrifice, our willingness to give up our personal desires and just say, look, we're not going to put Fred or Joe or Jim or Clara up in front of the television because it's our principles, you know, that our steps and our traditions, which are really what's doing it for us. And the newspaper people and the television people, they're more impressed with that. You know, in fact, in the old days, they were the ones who had to remind us that this is an anonymous organization, because we were the ones who thought we could break our anonymity for the good of AA. But they're the ones who sometimes said, no, you can't, you know, why are you doing that? You know, don't you understand that being anonymous, having that humility is more attractive? You know, that you stick to your primary purpose, try and carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, and keep out of this controversy. That's more attractive. That's what gets people in, rather than you know, playing the big shot and saying, look at Jim or Fred, you know, what they've done. And you know, so that tradition 12, principles before personalities, it's just to sum up, it's I don't know how long I've been going for, but just that humility that you see in tradition 12 and a lot of the other traditions, that sacrifice, that we don't want to, you know, we just stick to our primary purpose, all those things, they, as Bill says, they weave a protective mantle under which we can grow in effectiveness and unity. So we're under these traditions, the protection that we get, we can carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. We can practice the steps ourselves. We can have groups that operate and flourish. You know, and it means that we can live and be happy, and the people who come after us can live and be happy. So the traditions are just an absolute godsend. You know, the fact that when Bill wrote those steps and said they were divinely inspired, and he wrote them in, you know, like half an hour. But, you know, the 12 traditions might have been a more measured piece of work. based on what he'd seen and what he'd heard about organizations before us who had tried to help alcoholics but fell away, like the Washingtonians, because they didn't have these things. A more measured approach to what will keep us all together. And in that sense, they're divinely inspired as well, in my view. And I think I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.